It has now been 5 months since Virginia Governor Ralph Northam declared a state of emergency in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. All across our country, people's lives have changed as a result of the initial lockdown. And as we approach the fall, many are concerned a second one may soon need to happen. Some are still locked in from the first time. The University of Virginia continues to plan for reopening classes virtually. At least that's what the situation is as of August 11th, 2020, the day after a community town hall was held. This installment of the Charlottesville Quarantine Report, the 45th one, we have some of the highlights from that event. I'm Sean Tubbs, the host of this show and the creator of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, as well as the creator of Charlottesville Community Engagement, a new media venture by Town Crier Productions that hopes to continue building on the momentum of this podcast and bringing you information you need to get through these times. Since I began this podcast, I'm now doing a daily podcast that you can see in the show notes. And so that means there's no need to do a newscast like I've been doing throughout a lot of these so far. I did say way back in episode one that this format for this would change. We'll talk about that at the end of the show today. But let's start with where we are with the numbers on August 11th, 2020. The number of COVID-19 cases in Virginia has increased by 996 today for a cumulative total of 101,745. 17 more deaths reported today for a total of 2,344. The 7-day positive testing rate increased to 7.5%. The Thomas Jefferson Health District reports another 21 cases today, with 7 from Louisa, 6 from Albemarle, 3 from Charlottesville, 3 from Nelson, 1 in Greene, and 1 from Fluvanna. The testing rate in this community is at 5.2% today, up from 5% yesterday. So let's get right into today's show, which is all about the University of Virginia's town hall from August 10th, the one that was directed to the community. President Jim Ryan began by explaining why they plan to reopen, reading from the same script he had used for a video he had shared with the University of Virginia, which incidentally was on the August 10th edition of the Community Engagement Newscast.
So I realize that the biggest question on your minds may be a simple one. Why are we even trying to bring students back to grounds at all? Well, the answer is fairly straightforward. Our mission as a university is to educate students, to conduct research, and to provide medical care. Students are involved in all of these missions, and all of them are better done in person, with students learning in a more engaging way, not just from their faculty, but from their peers, with researchers and their student assistants having access to labs, and with doctors and medical and nursing students able to see and treat patients. That's why, from the very beginning, we sought to have students return as long as we could do so in a reasonably safe manner. We know bringing students back to grounds carries some risks, but there are risks regardless of whatever decision we make, including staying online all semester. There are risks for some students for whom UVA is the safest place to be, or who may face challenges learning online at home. Our Office of the Dean of Students is already coordinating to help students who need it because of our delayed opening. There are risks for our employees whose jobs depend on having students on grounds. We also know that 2/3 of our students live off grounds and outside of university housing, which means that thousands of students are going to be living in Charlottesville, whether classes are in person or not. Our view has been that it will be better for everyone if these students feel like they're part of the university community rather than outside of it.
President Ryan said UVA teams have been working on plans to figure out the logistics of how to put health and safety measures into practice. The decisions have been made through a series of gating criteria.
These criteria look at things like the progression of the virus, our testing capacity, our capacity for isolating and quarantining students who have the virus or have been exposed to it, the capacity of the hospital, and our ability to test in the broader Charlottesville community.
These metrics have already caused UVA to delay the start of the academic year by 2 weeks. Ryan said they are cautiously optimistic students can be brought back to grounds.
In preparation for students returning, we've established a set of expectations and requirements for students, faculty, and staff to follow, including wearing masks, maintaining proper physical distance, and limiting social gatherings to no more than 15, which means no large parties.
Ryan said UVA will continue to track trends and will monitor the situation. We'll have more about how UVA is preparing for in-person classes during COVID times in the future. But first, Ryan took the opportunity to talk a little about his philosophy.
One of my goals as president has been to make UVA a better neighbor to the broader Charlottesville region. This is why we raised the minimum wage for UVA employees and contractors, why we're working to create more affordable housing, and why we established the President's Council on UVA and Community Partnerships, which has done and continues to do a remarkable job in offering guidance to me. It's also why we created the Equity Center, to work in partnership with community members to identify and measure the inequities in the Charlottesville area and to address those inequities. And it's also why we've stayed in close touch with community leaders and the local VDH as we thought through our plans for the fall. We understand that what we do on grounds matters beyond grounds, and that we really are in this together. And as we get closer to the start of in-person classes, we will continue to do our best to make our best decisions that we can for our students, faculty, staff, and members of this community. And we'll continue to engage with the community, and in particular, the Council on UVA Community Partnerships.
Dr. Mitch Rosner is the chair of the Department of Medicine. He talked a little bit about the reopening decision from a medical perspective. Let's listen to some of it.
So in order to open UVA safely, we have been working over the last several months to define the conditions under which we can do that safely. And we have broadly defined that into five areas, including operational areas, areas that we need to have adequate infrastructure around, the viral epidemiology, the availability of healthcare system resources to support caring for patients with COVID-19, and then community partnerships, community testing programs. And our feeling has been from the start that in order to safely open grounds, we have to be operationally ready. We have to have the infrastructure in place to prevent, contain, and respond to the infections. And that opening best occurs when the minimum number of COVID cases is present, we have a stable situation, or that's decreasing in the area, when the health systems have the capacity and resources to rapidly respond to outbreaks to make sure that we care for our patients, and that community education partnerships, as well as testing programs and access to healthcare, are present to protect others that are around grounds.
Dr. Rosner said they are looking at the caseload in the community very closely.
In Albemarle County, as well in the Charlottesville area, that what you saw over the last month or so was that viral case counts were in fact increasing. And that was something that we had been very fortunate in our community to not see early on in the pandemic, that we had a very low case rate, and that case rate was very stable. So what we were seeing was that viral cases were increasing, and there was some instability in those numbers where we were seeing both confined outbreaks to communal living situations, but also increasing community spread that made us concerned. Another thing that we have been looking at is the percent positivity of viral tests. This is a method that looks at how many people who are getting tests, what percent of those have a positive test. The WHO uses a threshold of approximately 5%, so that if you're at 5% or below, it's felt that that viral spread is under good control. But if the number increases above that, that's a sign that things like public health measures or other measures need to be really enacted much more strictly to try to gain control of viral transmission. What you saw in terms of the Thomas Jefferson Health District, where we're in part of that district, was that viral test positivity rates went up to almost as high as 7%. Now, I'm pleased to say that in the last couple of weeks, that's gone down back to 5% and seems to be decreasing and stabilizing. But that was another area that led us to be concerned that what we were seeing was a high viral rate of transmission, not certainly high enough that mirrored what you saw in New York City or in Miami or other big cities, but was really out of character for what we had seen early on in the county and in the city. And that viral test rate was increasing. So both of those conditions, along with concerns about the testing supply chain, really did not meet our gating characteristics and therefore led to the recommendation to President Ryan and the delay in opening.
But what happens when suddenly people from all over the country and the world come here? UVA is attempting to put in place testing before students step foot onto grounds.
One of the concerns that we discussed early on is that we recognize that UVA really attracts students from all over the world. And while that's a great thing, it's a great thing for a great university, it also, during a pandemic, leads to concerns that people may come back with asymptomatic infections. And we wanted to do everything we could to avoid that. So in order to do that, we're mandating that all students, before they come to class, have to test negative with a viral PCR test. Those tests are mailed to the students, and the student returns them within a 7-day window prior to returning to school. And that's a way of trying to ensure as best we can that when students return to Charlottesville and our community, that they are not harboring virus and can transmit that to people in the community or within the grounds as well. In addition to that testing strategy, we are making testing available to employees and faculty who may be asymptomatic and are concerned about an exposure. We are also going to have the ability to test asymptomatic contacts of people who are infected. And lastly, in a novel strategy for the dorm buildings, we will be testing the wastewater effluent. The wastewater from buildings contains viral genetic material that can be detected by these PCR tests at a very high sensitivity. If we detect that a building's wastewater turns positive, we will go in and test all the students within that dorm to try to find people at the earliest stages that may be infected and then have the ability to isolate and quarantine those.
Dr. Craig Kent is the Executive Vice President for Health Affairs, and he briefed the community on capacity at UVA. He noted that the Department of Medicine has many experts in infectious diseases.
We've learned a lot about COVID over the past 5 months. It's a complicated disease, and everyone's been learning together, and we've been able to share information between our institution and other institutions around the country. In a number of areas, we've been very successful in, I believe, partnering with the community and helping. We were the first COVID clinic in the state to develop here in Charlottesville, and we now have 4 COVID clinics throughout the city of Charlottesville. We were the first institution in the state to develop internal testing and have been able to develop a testing group here that's really first in class and has incredible capability. We converted our new hospital tower, which has 84 beds, to a COVID center. And in fact, as Mitch mentioned earlier, about somewhere between 20 and 30 of those beds are filled, but we have the capacity to have 84 COVID beds at any particular time. And then lastly, we have a very active testing program in the community. We just announced a couple of weeks ago that we'll be out in the community 4 days a week providing testing to various parts, 2 fixed locations on Monday and Tuesday, and on Wednesday and Thursday, 2 variable locations throughout the community. A question that I think has come up quite frequently is, do we have the capacity here at UVA Health to be able to handle a surge if that were to happen? And I think the answer is absolutely yes. Mitch mentioned that currently in the hospital, we have about 20 to 30 of our beds filled in any given time with COVID patients. Our total hospital capacity is around 700 beds. There's no doubt that we're very busy now with non-COVID patients. The hospital's full, and we're proud of the fact that we're able to take care of all of these patients that need our care. But we have a number of levers that we can pull very quickly to change that capacity from non-COVID patients to COVID patients if that were to turn out to be necessary. So we have a substantial amount of capacity that's available, and I want everyone to feel comfortable that if there was the need, if there is the need in the future, that we'll be ready and able to take care of these people.
Several UVA departments related to the community will move into space at the Albemarle Hotel on West Main Street to consolidate efforts. That's the big yellow building. Kevin McDonald is the Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion.
So I'd like to share that units from across grounds felt compelled to leverage their resources and strengthen their internal communication efforts in ways that better serve our Charlottesville and Albemarle communities during this extremely challenging pandemic. From the creation of an employee volunteer center to better share opportunities for our staff and faculty to get involved throughout our local community, to the more targeted efforts surrounding the creation of testing clinics in areas identified and supported by our community, this group has been energized to leverage human resources to better coordinate support efforts and in some cases even create supportive pillars. In that same vein, four units across UVA, from which include the Equity Center, the Office of the Vice Provost for Academic Outreach, the Division for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, and the Office for Community Partnerships within UVA's health system, have come together to support and strengthen community partnership efforts. And we are so incredibly excited with your generous support, Jim, that we will soon have a physical space located in the community, specifically located in what many know as the Albemarle Hotel on Main Street. It is a space that will be co-designed with community input and that will primarily house Equity Center staff, but will also have representation from other units within our coalition. Most importantly, our efforts will continue to revolve around community-driven work like education, support for jobs and wages, community health, and the redress of inequity.
J.J. Davis is the Chief Operating Officer and Executive Vice President of UVA, and she has been overseeing efforts to prepare grounds.
As you know, UVA faculty, staff, and contractors, all 24,000 strong, are members of the local community.
Davis said all aspects of UV operations have had to change in order to be ready for COVID. Let's listen to some of the planning.
Earlier this summer, we procured PPE for students and employees from a local small women-owned business named Right Ideas. So thank you. We developed new plans for and procedures for housing, dining, transit buses. So there will be less people on every single bus. So people have to be patient and wait a little longer. But it's all in the name of safety. We've also modified our recreational facilities and libraries to promote the appropriate physical distancing. Our buses and facilities will have reduced capabilities, and we're also allowing lots of extra scheduling and time in the system for frequent cleaning. So as we prepared spaces across grounds for the return of students, faculty, staff, and our contractors, we have literally assessed every single space. There will be reduced capacity and added signage. We've installed 75 plexiglass shields in all of our classrooms and hundreds in more point of service locations like libraries, retail, dining, and reception areas. Classrooms will be cleaned daily, and excess cleaning supplies will be stocked for students and faculty if they need to wipe down workspaces when they come and go. We've also spent a lot of time working with our housekeeping staff on enhanced cleaning protocols and really, really appreciate all their time and dedication. We've also been in the process of installing 2,600 hand sanitizer across grounds and lots, over hundreds of door-free openers. In addition to our prevention efforts, we do have a robust testing program and monitoring program that Dr. Mitch Rosner talked about, to support the safe return of our faculty, staff, students, and contractors, and also additional plans for isolation and quarantine if someone were to get sick.
Liz McGill is the Executive Vice President and Provost. She covered information about what classroom instruction will be like.
The first thing I wanted to say is I think I'm in my 21st year of living in Charlottesville. After a little bit of time away, my children were born here. I went to school here. I feel this is my home. So I hope it's all right to say that I feel like a community member as well as a University of Virginia employee. Nothing made me happier than being able to move back here last summer to join the University of Virginia team. There are really two things I've been working on that come out of my work. One is working with our Vice President of Research on the research ramp up of this summer, as well as the start of some graduate and professional programs, and then the work on the fall classroom and educational experience along with all of the deans. I think the key to both of those things, especially the repopulation of grounds of this summer, is that we have been following all of the protocols that many on the panels have discussed, masking, social distancing, some testing protocols, daily health checks with almost 2,000 students as of the end of July and several thousand more students coming with us, coming to grounds for graduate and professional programs starting in August. Thousands of employees, and of course, UVA Health has 13,000 employees who are working every day. So I guess there's a lot of talk of the return to grounds and the way we have been thinking about return to pursuing our mission on grounds, our teaching, our research, our clinical care, and our service mission has been a kind of phased return. And what I can report, I think most importantly for the community here, is that it's gone very well. And following these protocols and being highly attentive to the safety concerns that we have about this infectious virus and many of the things JJ talked about, changing all of our operations, they've been working. And so we've approached this cautiously, returning to our mission over the last couple of months, and it's going well.
Now, one of the biggest concerns that people have in the community is the possibility of large gatherings of UVA students where physical distancing and facial covering protocols are not followed. Patricia Lampkin is the Vice President and Chief Student Affairs Officer at the University of Virginia.
I'd like to begin on a positive note by acknowledging the great energy students bring to our community. Yes, we are annoyed by the increased traffic, but throughout the school year, students are found everywhere doing good things. They volunteer in all corners of the community, from fire stations to local schools to nursing homes. They attend our churches, eat in our restaurants, shop in our stores, and strengthen our local economy. They are often at the forefront of social issues, sensitive to disparities within the university and the larger community. They're often aware of those disparities before we are. They're also young and make mistakes. Mistakes are part of the learning process. It becomes a real matter of concern, though, when their actions affect others. Through the University Judiciary Committee, there have always been consequences for behavior that harms other people and property, whether on grounds or in the larger Charlottesville and Albemarle communities. This year, the stakes are even higher because each of us, students, everyone, will have a direct impact on the health of others. I truly believe the majority of our students know this and want to do the right thing. In fact, this has been a motivating discussion with student leaders over the summer. On the other hand, when they gather with others, often with drinks and food in full supply, good judgment disappears and a group mentality can take hold. For this reason, we have established clear rules that students must agree to in writing. The rules are concrete. They include wearing a mask, practicing physical distancing, and keeping their gatherings very small, 15 people at most. Forgetting to wear a mask to class is a mistake. Having a party with 50 to 100 people is more than a mistake. Such behavior will result in consequences and disciplinary action.
But will that really have any teeth? Tim Hafey is the university's main counsel.
In terms of enforcement, our approach essentially ratchets up the seriousness of our response with the seriousness of the violation. If someone isn't wearing a mask and it is a potentially inadvertent or forgetful matter, our hope is that they will be reminded, that people will talk to each other and encourage adherence to these rules. Only when there's persistent violations or refusal to comply or a one-time very serious violation will that potentially result in a suspension from the university immediately or a longer adjudicative process with possible sanctions. Major violations can be reported by members of the community through a form that we are creating that will be made available on our website, broadcast through various channels, and then members of the community will be encouraged to use to tell us if they observe violations, to have a chance to provide some information that we will pursue and follow up, including the submission of photographs or video evidence. Our hope is that we won't need to do that very much because people will accept that return to grounds requires new standards of behavior, that over time people accept and adhere to that, but we're prepared to enforce the rules if they're not observed.
You're listening to the Charlottesville Quarantine Report, a public service of Town Crier Productions. Town Crier Productions was formed to bring people the information they need to read or hear, including this episode of the program. To support us, consider making a monthly contribution to our Patreon account. Read the show notes for details. Now back to the program. During the question and answer period, President Ryan moderated the question. The following is a version of that discussion, edited for time. If you want to watch the full thing, the link is in the show notes.
So the first one is, how likely will the fall and spring semester be completely online given current trends and events? This one I will take. You know, as we mentioned earlier, we have these gating criteria that we're following, and if we meet them, we'll be open up fully. And right now, we're cautiously optimistic. We obviously took a two-week delay, but the trends are looking positive. That said, I mean, one thing that this virus has taught me and probably, well, hopefully taught all of us is humility. And it's impossible to predict the progression of the virus, which is why we also have criteria that we're going to follow if we need to change course. We'll go to the next question. What will UVA, together with the city, do to make sure that Rugby Road does not become a major virus super spreader site? I think this is for Pat and Tim.
So I'll start off. We've been in conversations, my colleagues, with the House corporations of the organizations that we know are on Rugby Road. The other student organizations are reaching out to each other starting this week, and are starting their own campaign to encourage all of the rules that they are now in the agreement that they are signing. I like the question because I think it takes the neighbors as well as the university. And I would encourage you as neighbors to address our students as neighbors. It's a good life lesson to learn, and we will address them also as students in their obligation and their rules that they have agreed to. And if we will start with education and move through to discipline, depending upon the degree of the violation. Tim, do you need to add anything?
Yeah, I'll just, you know, Pat brings the hopeful, sunny encouragement piece, and I'll bring the reality of enforcement. The rules are enforceable against organizations as well as people. So if there is an organized event on Rugby Road involving a Greek organization, then we have the ability to take action against the individuals involved as well as the organization itself, including removing its charter and not recognizing them, funding them, giving them university space or recognition. Again, we hope it doesn't come to that, but if it does, we will be prepared to take that kind of organizational action.
So I think this one is for Dr. Kent. I've heard that while bed space is available, there's a shortage of trained doctors and nurses to support a likely increase in COVID-19 cases across the community with the return of students. Can you comment?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. That's a great question. And I know that it's been a conversation in the community, so I'm remiss for not mentioning this in my opening comments. We currently have enough physicians, nurses, and staff to care for something higher than 600 patients in the hospital at any given time. And just to remind you of the numbers, we currently have somewhere between 20 and 30 COVID patients in the hospital, and that's essentially been our census for the past few weeks. So you can see that we have enough staff and faculty to really take care of a significant number of patients if there was an increase in COVID. The issue is that we're busy taking care of non-COVID patients, but as I mentioned in my earlier comments, we have the ability to switch very quickly. So if the number of COVID patients increases, we can really have the capacity, both in terms of beds and in terms of people, to be able to care for whatever needs to be cared for.
Thanks, Craig. Okay, so the next question, the VDH recently released the COVIDWISE app to provide community members notice of possible exposures. Will this tool be promoted and utilized with students? I think either Mitch or JJ could probably answer this.
Sure, I'll be happy to try. So the COVIDWISE app, for those of you who don't know, is an app that uses Bluetooth technology to determine whether a person has a significant contact with another person so that if they got infected, that person could be notified. We've advertised that app in several communications to the university community. And then in our new wellness checking app, there is a direct link to allow people to sign up for the COVIDWISE app. So in partnership with VDH, we are promoting that heavily. We think that's another tool to aid in rapid contact tracing, which we think is critical to viral containment.
So next question, what exactly is happening with the sports football season? And are these games being played with fans in the stadium? So I can take this one. The ACC recently released a schedule that is, you know, assuming that sports can go on. This is a way of planning for the fall. Everyone involved continues to monitor the virus and to monitor how things are going. There haven't been any final decisions about fans in the stadium. I mean, obviously the stadiums will not be full, but who might be permitted to watch games is still something that is under discussion. So the next question is, what is the plan for alternative work schedules to allow parents to be home with school-aged children for virtual learning? And I think JJ and or Liz.
Yeah, how about I start, Liz, and then you can amplify. So we have been working on issues regarding our workforce, which is flexible schedules and offering remote work where possible, because we know there are both issues of elder care and child care. And we absolutely understand that arranging child care is a major concern for faculty, staff, and team members as local K-12 schools have announced their fall plans. So we are requesting that employees work directly with their managers, and we are working with managers and the department chairs now, both to be creative and flexible. And also on our website, there are a list of benefits that we offer to our workforce. As you know, we have on-site childcare options and other portals, activities so that we can link childcare services to our workforce. Liz, I'm going to turn it over to you.
The only thing I'd add is we are considering additional steps. And I know one is we're working hard with staff and faculty to connect people to one another who have similar needs. I think that's been rolled out, but the other things we're thinking about as well.
I might add that we've put together a team at the health system to take a close look at this. We struggle a bit more because so many of our people need to be in front of patients. And so it's absolutely necessary they be at the hospital or around the health system. So as Liz suggested, we're trying to put together some creative solutions in terms of grouping people together. And there have been some really wonderful ideas that have been brought forth in town halls. So more to come on that soon, I think, from all of us. We know this is a really, really important problem, and we're trying to help solve.
All right. Thanks to all of you. I think we've covered this question, but I don't think it can be asked and answered enough. And it's back to Pat and Tim. What about students who refuse to wear a mask in the community and gather in groups in excess of 50?
Yeah, maybe I'll start with that and say that under our policies, the Office of the Dean of Students has the ability to promptly and unilaterally suspend any student that creates a danger to health and safety and the organization of a large party or refusal, right, being asked but refused to wear a mask could rise to that level, and that student could be immediately removed. That would kick off as a process to determine if that is lasting and permanent, but we have the ability to take that step. All the other violations will go through our student-run university judiciary committee. We believe very strongly in the efficacy of that process. They have the ability to investigate and adjudicate those allegations, and allegations like this will ultimately go through that process as well.
All right. Pat, do you have anything you want to add or no?
No, I think that just to reiterate that we also have the ability to address organizations through the judicial process, and we plan to do that immediately and clearly. It's a risk to other people, and I think our students, that if they need to be reminded, they'll be reminded immediately.
All right, thanks. So I think I'll take this next question, given that I like to run as well. I run a lot all over Charlottesville, and my routes tend to cross over grounds. Will masks be required on grounds for those who are running, exercising? So under our policy, and those on the call can correct me if I get this wrong, but if you are outside and you can maintain 6 feet of distance, you do not need to wear a mask. So if you're running alone and you don't expect that you're going to be running into a lot of other people, you don't need to wear a mask. If you're running with other people, maintain at least 6 feet of distance. To be on the safe side, I would bring a mask with you when you're running, because you just never know. I think this one is for you, JJ. Has there been any analysis done of the cost to Charlottesville residents who work at UVA and businesses that depend on students being in person?
So we have a bunch of informal, and I know the Chamber's been working on more formal quantification, but the impact is real. So our faculty and staff, many are forward-facing and are daily involved in working with our students, and their job is assisting students. Think about dining or housing. In addition to that, there's been some work done on local businesses and the value that the students bring in terms of off-grounds housing, dining, services, and so forth. So I'd be happy to provide some follow-up information on actual quantitative numbers, but it is real and tangible. Our students make a significant economic impact to our local businesses and our community.
Okay, I think this next one is open to all, but Kevin, I'd like your ideas. I'll offer some too. Other than following UVA and CDC guidelines, what are practical needs we as community members can help meet or problems we can help solve? So first of all, I really appreciate the question. I won't speak to anything specifically other than I think reminding students if they need reminding. How important it is to follow the guidelines. But I think it's, in some respects, how you think about the fall. And I think start with the presumption that people are trying to do their best and that we are genuinely in this together and that people are going to make mistakes. Some of them are UVA students. Some of them are community members. But if we think of this as a shared effort and a shared obligation with understanding of mistakes, but also a willingness on our part to enforce the rules that we've laid down, I think we have a good chance of a successful fall. And Kevin, I don't know if you have anything else you'd like to add.
Yeah, I just only add, Jim, that I think it's going to be important for us to keep those lines of communication flowing both ways. I mean, I think we have to be able to hear from the community some of the needs that are cropping up, some of the issues that they are facing. And we have to, as we are dedicated to kind of building our trust, work with them to ultimately try to meet those needs in ways that they deem most appropriate. But also, to your point, being able to hear about ways that this transition back to grounds may be impacting them. So I think we're driven at the university to really kind of live in this co-created space. And part of that recognizes that to establish that trust and credibility, we have to continue to devote ourselves to trying to meet the needs of our community, but also sharing the information that we know so that we can build in a level of trust in the process, a trust in our efforts as we transition back to ground. So I think just keeping those lines of communication open are going to be incredibly important.
Great, thanks. Anyone else?
You know, I might add that I think Mitch and I had a great conversation this morning, and some thoughts about the disease itself. If we do the right things, if we show social distance, if we wear masks, we can keep this disease to a minimum. It's actually fairly straightforward. If you look around the country where the guidelines haven't been followed, then the incidence of the disease increases. So a good example of that is in the hospital. We have 13,000 employees. We have had two situations where an employee has been infected because they've been exposed to COVID patients in the hospital. If you consider the number of connections, that's extraordinary. And that's because we follow all the guidelines, use PPE, and do this very well. There have been no examples of patients that have been infected coming into the hospital through either our employees or other patients with COVID. So as long as we do this well, we'll be successful. How can the community help? I think we can keep an eye on each other. We can keep an eye on the students. We can keep an eye on other community members. If there's the need for feedback, provide that feedback. But again, if this can be a community-wide effort to really follow the policies, we'll do well in the long run with this very, very difficult disease.
You've been listening to a town hall from the University of Virginia, edited so it's a little bit shorter for you to listen to, with some of the salient points more prominent. This is the 45th episode of the Charlottesville Quarantine Report. I'm Sean Tubbs. I put this show together initially in order to understand what was happening, and that made me realize that I needed to get back into journalism, so that's what I'm doing now. And you can hear me daily reading a newsletter called Community Engagement. It's the first of many products I hope to offer through Town Crier Productions, which at this point is supported by sponsorship. The Piedmont Environmental Council, my last employer, is sponsoring a weekly look at local government. I also hope to do other programs in the future, but I'm just getting started. The daily Charlottesville Community Engagement newscast and newsletter is intended to give you a brief snapshot into what's happening and what's happened. And it's hopefully designed for you to be able to get to the government meetings that you need to be at in order to make a comment, if you so choose. We're in different times. The world has changed a little bit, and it's going to stay changed for some time. There might not be a normal that we go back to. So my theory is, why not go ahead and try to figure out a way to bring these meetings to you in a way that makes sense for you to listen to? I'm Sean Tubbs, as I said, and I hope you will continue to join me. Thank you so much for listening, and if you found this program worthwhile, please send it along to a member of your family or some friends or people at your business. Please share the information. That's how we're going to get through this, through information that we can all use to move forward. I'm Sean Tubbs. Thank you for listening, and stay safe.